Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the tornado shelter at the North Carolina General Assembly, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. I'm back. Glad to be here. It is Friday, May 25th, 2018. Gary Robertson of the Associated Press, a State House reporter, longtime State House reporter, is here to discuss the budget, perhaps other things that will be taking place during this short session, and of course some quirky and eccentric and just throwaway questions, which I know you love. Gary, it's good to be back. How are you?
Well, I'm doing really good, and we're really glad to have you back. It's there's been a little hole in the press corps membership without you here the last several weeks, but we're glad that you are here now with a 50% larger family.
Thank you. It is good to be here. It was a relatively busy week, not totally overwhelming. We got bits and pieces of the budget. You and I are chatting here on a Friday morning. We'll get much more of the budget. We think by Monday night, perhaps larger chunks of it will come out over this holiday weekend. I don't want to throw any numbers out before you get a chance to give me, we'll say three numbers that when we say budget, 2018-2019 budget, so far of what we know, what are the three numbers that stand out to you? Take that in any direction you want.
Well, there's $23.9 billion, which is what we know the House and the Senate Republicans have agreed to spend in the coming fiscal year. They decided on that actually before the session even began. It's a reflection of several weeks of work they were doing behind closed doors. And it's about, I believe it's about $300 to $400 million more than was already planned in the budget last year. If your listeners recall, it's a two-year budget, so they already have a plan for the second year already in place, so that if they even didn't come here, they could still run state government. They added another, I believe, $300 million or so to that.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Another number. 31,200. That's how much in the budget that state employees, that will be their minimum salary for full-time, permanent state employees, rank-and-file state employees and state agencies. That's going to be a significant increase for potentially thousands of workers in jobs, as the State Employees Association said. People who are housekeepers, people who work and take care of the sick in state institutions, road laborers. So that's a significant, that's very significant. And if I had to pick another one, $35 million, which is what the Republicans have decided that they will spend towards school safety and security improvements, the hiring of having grants so that local school districts can hire more psychologists, social workers, police resource officers. I know that they believe it, that number should be higher with some other things that they're doing in future years. But $35 million is another key number that was put out this week.
So we'll still, I want to jump back to the 31.2 in a minute, but let's stick with the school safety numbers and just for a brief conversation. Republican leadership rolled out a $20 million plan last week. I think that was the number they indicated initially. It was low 20s, and they've bumped the school safety pot, if you will, up to 35. It's $12 million for more SROs, school resource officers, $10 million for additional nurses. $5 million for this Speak Up app, which is a way for students to file complaints or let folks know about harassment or bullying. And, you know, of course, it's all political. It's going to become political. On one side, you've got folks saying, I think Representative David Lewis said, this is a very important and very good first step. On the other side, you have Democrats saying this pales in comparison to what the governor would like the funding to be on this level. We've also heard from some advocates who say there should be pause or reason for concern about having too many SROs in schools, as it perhaps is going to lead to more arrests and more young people getting into the system.
Sure.
So I think if anybody can agree on anything, this is a step. It is a step toward doing something. And I don't think that this is the end of school safety. I mean, I think we're going to hear more about this
next
year.
No, I mean,
sure.
House Republicans have said, even from the beginning of a study committee that they began following the Florida school shooting in February, they said that they would continue to look at this topic even when they the session began, even after the session later this year. So it's certainly not the end. And I know that some legislators say a lot of this money that they're looking at are grants. And one of the top budget writers told us in a news conference that this was really designed, the grants were designed to kind of figure out where the demand was for particular types of positions, and that they would come, it's possible they would come back, or probably that they would come back at a later date, maybe next year, and have more permanent funds that would go to more school districts.
Mm-hmm. So the $31,200, this is a living wage that Republicans rolled out on Thursday. It's going to be a significant raise for the folks. And you and I both asked about the number of people who are currently making the minimum, which is in the 24,000 range. We didn't get a hard number on that, but it sounds like there are at least several thousand people who are at the bottom. There are thousands and thousands of people that are between 24 and 31. So all of those folks will come up to either 31,200 annually, or a 2% raise, whichever is larger. Mm-hmm. So if you're making 29.5 or 30K, it's going to actually push you over that 31.2 threshold.
Potentially, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of the narrative behind whether what this does from an election standpoint, an electoral standpoint. What's your read on that? Because this is this is something that Republicans, I think, are going to tout and sell and celebrate for a while.
Well, when you think about living wage and that kind of catchphrase, mm-hmm. what are you usually thinking about? You're usually thinking about about progressive groups, liberal-leaning groups who have talked about this $15 an hour
right.
idea. Now, that $15 an hour idea has been more about the private sector and raising the minimum wage everywhere. But for Republicans to push this and to have it in their budget for public sector employees, still kind of, I think in some ways it could neutralize that type of issue by saying, listen, we're doing it for the people that we have direct control
sure.
over these employees. It's interesting, again, the State Employees Association of North Carolina, they are a significant player in state politics and legislative races, and they certainly are excited about this and were involved at the table to talk about it and to express what they wanted. I wonder if this potentially could, I would think that Scenic would be interested now in supporting those legislators,
mm-hmm.
particularly Republican legislators, that backed this. So in November, maybe this is could help Republicans retain their majorities or to even retain their supermajorities
sure.
potentially. So it's a, I think it's a very politically crafty move. But not to diminish the fact that, I'm sure there are Republicans who believe that state employees shouldn't be close to poverty. So it was a fascinating announcement, and it'll be interesting to see how Democrats in the legislature, when they have to vote on the budget, whether they'll have some heartburn about voting against it when there are several thousand employees, particularly Wake County legislators, who may have a difficulty voting against it.
It is an abbreviated timeline for the budget this year. At least I've only through three budget cycles, but it's very abbreviated, expedited from what I've seen. You've been through 15 or 20 of these budget exercises, and this is the most expedited one that you have been through as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what we're expecting is budget out, maybe over the weekend in full, if not Monday night. Committees Tuesday, votes in the Senate Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, votes in the House Thursday, Friday, and this may be on to the executive mansion by roughly this time next week. This is a very fast process. Have you seen a faster budget process than this?
I can't recall one. Now, there have been in some even-numbered years, and I hope your listeners know that in even-numbered years, again, they just adjust the second year of the budget. They do have sped things along where you might even see one chamber roll out their budget ideas within the first week of that short session. But to have, within a week and a half, essentially an agreement between the House and the Senate leadership on what will be in that budget, I've never seen it before, and the fact that, again, getting into the weeds here, the fact that this will be a conference report in the sense of that there will be no ability for any other legislators to amend this budget is pretty unprecedented, going back at least almost a half century, according to people I've talked to.
The amendment process typically takes hours and hours in both chambers. I mean, I don't remember off the top. I mean, you're going to have dozens of, you probably don't have 100 amendments proposed, but you could have 50 or 60 amendments proposed in the House. Many of them, sure, might get tabled, but this budget is not going to include any of that process. It is a simple up or down vote.
That's right. And so Democrats are very unhappy with that, saying that they are, their constituents expect them, and they feel that they are obligated to press the case for their people back home through the amendment process, and that's been short-circuited. Some people have called it an affront to democracy. You know, the Republicans, when we asked Republicans about it, they really don't try to go and talk and kind of counter that. Mm-hmm. It's more about efficiency. It's about, we've already passed a two-year budget last year. We actually passed more spending earlier this year.
The lion's share of debate has already taken
place. That's right.
Democrats were welcome to take part in that.
Yes, and they did. And they did. And there were a lot. And, also, we talked to one senator who said, the budget process as of a couple days ago was still open. And if Democrats wanted to come informally to them and raise concerns, they could. But again, it hasn't had that kind of public process that the public or the members of the media have come to expect out of a budget.
So no amendments. And I would just note briefly that I've talked to some Republicans on background who are not thrilled that this is the process that is playing out. The John Locke Foundation has criticized this as the process that is playing out. But as one GOP operative said to me this week, it's a story about process. That's not going to resonate back at home with the people in Person County or Caldwell County. They're not overly concerned. Didn't sound like they're overly concerned about the long-term effects of a process story, given
that it's not something that people usually, that the broader general public gets up in arms about. Mm-hmm. It does with the people who are following this closely and the activists within the party. I would say, though, that if there are some provisions that have not been debated that are particularly onerous, when I say provisions, maybe policy changes, if there are any in the budget that significantly changes things or could hurt, potentially focus on a particular group or maybe earmarks money for special projects and things, that could get some legs. But generally speaking, you're right. Process is, while important, it's not something that moves the needle usually when it comes to getting people out to vote.
He is Gary Robertson, an Associated Press State House reporter. He knows this building well. You can follow him on Twitter at Gary D. Robertson. Gary, budget likely going to pass through next week. Before we chat about some other possible items from the legislature in this short session, do you have a sense of whether or not Governor Cooper would sign, veto, or, of course, has the option of letting this budget bill become law without his signature? It's early.
It would seem like, though, it would seem like he has staked out a position when he released his own budget recommendations the week before the session began, that if it does not block a planned corporate tax reduction or a planned individual income tax reduction for the highest wage earners, it would seem like he would have no other recourse but to veto it. He has placed so much capital, political capital, on saying that we cannot spend as much as we need to on public education because of these tax cuts that have benefited the wealthy and out-of-state corporations, mm-hmm. even though it you know, helps all corporations. And again, for context, these tax cuts for individuals have applied to everyone, pretty much everyone, over the last 4 or 5 years, and they've raised the standard deduction and things. But it seems as it's possible he could let it become law without his signature and raise his concerns. But as we talked about earlier, there are going to be some things in here that are going to be difficult for his fellow Democrats to push the no button on.
Right.
Particularly, as we said, the salary increases. And again, the teacher pay increases that will help most teachers. There are some, as of this discussion, we don't know whether the Republicans have sweetened the pot for the veteran teachers. So anyway, getting back to that. So I think it would be a surprise to me if the governor does not veto it, but we'll hear what he has to say later next week.
Right, and I would only take that a step further to say I agree with you. I would expect him to veto it. I'll be interested to see, come a week from now, just how many Democrats vote for it, but vote for it with some criticism effectively, they split with the governor. We've seen that on some things before. But
sure.
To your point, Democrats in swing districts are going to have to think longer and harder than Roy Cooper, who's not in an election year.
You're right. We've seen in the past where sometimes Democrats on the first vote will vote with how they feel
have to.
And then when something gets vetoed, they come and get reallied right. With the governor to support him.
Right.
So.
All right. The indication from Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger yesterday on the floor of the Senate was another couple of weeks of business after next week, after the budget process. What are you expecting?
Well, we do know that there are some discussions about constitutional amendments.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would probably be discussed. Both chambers have kind of pet constitutional amendments they've liked to have gotten passed. Before the voters, one on eminent domain comes to mind, another one on lowering the cap on the individual income tax rate. There's a hunting and fishing
yep.
rights amendment that's been floating around, and then voter ID.
The controversial one, the most controversial of those.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Having something within the state constitution that makes some kind of identification of the voter an element of your qualifications to vote, which could help them down the road if they try to pass voter ID legislation separate from the constitutional amendment to actually implement it. Just because they put this in the Constitution doesn't mean that we automatically have voter ID.
Right.
There would have to be a separate piece of legislation. So
one of the arguments is that, as I understand it, if that question goes before the voters, and the voters and polling would indicate that voters do support voter ID, not just in North Carolina, but really across the country, whether or not they understand it or whether or not it's a messaging war or battle or different sides of this, but that it may very well pass because people do support voter ID. If it's within the state constitution, it gives Republicans a better standing in a court
right.
of law if they do other elections changes or codify a a citizen-approved voter ID constitutional amendment with an actual law that would mm-hmm. mandate voter ID. Is that, I don't know if I articulated that well, but
that's the argument that I've heard. And again, this is all also it's having amendments on the ballot in the fall, particularly the ones that we're talking about, are things that will get voters out that are generally aligned with Republican and conservative principles. That's the
right.
argument.
Right.
And they need all, they believe that they need all the votes they can to withstand what may be a Democratic wave,
right.
you know, so far out.
What is interesting, another element of just the possibility of a voter ID question, constitutional amendment question, is how it will affect African-American turnout. Because as we saw in 2010 and 2014, black turnout was down, and that was with an African-American president. Depending on who you talk to, you can get spun and shaped and directed in different ways on this. But I do wonder if there is a question about voter ID. I really think it then becomes very much a messaging battle. But mm-hmm. how will that spark affect the turnout of minorities in 2016? I don't know. I don't know.
I think that if the Democrats are smart and they'll tell their voters that this is another ploy by Republicans to suppress the vote ultimately in the future,
right.
and that they need to stop this. And so I think it can be for Democrats, very keen on winning one or both chambers next year, that they will certainly press that message.
Right. We'll hear the words fraud, safety, disenfranchisement, and you just mentioned another one.
Suppression.
We'll hear those four words, I think, frequently if this question goes to the ballot in November of 2018.
Yeah. And we know that redistricting when racial overtone, racially charged redistricting played a role in a Supreme Court race, state
right.
Supreme Court race in 2016, where they got on the air and criticized someone for a sitting justice for a decision that he was involved in.
Right. All right. Much more to come on the budget and, of course, short session happenings. Let's transition to the quirky portion of the morning. You're a baseball fan.
Yes, I am.
Nationals are doing they're doing okay.
Yeah.
I think they're like 26 and 22 now.
Decimated by injuries.
Decimated by injuries, but only three games back, crowded in NL East. Mm-hmm. It's a long summer.
They'll
probably be okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think I've ever asked you this. Who was your favorite baseball player growing up? Or players?
Well, I know this is not very...
if it's a Yankee, the door
no,
is there.
No, but in 2017, 2018, people look back and they'll be like, why did you root for him? Pete Rose was
what everybody
wanted to be like. I mean, they wanted to dive head first, stretching out a double into a triple. He was how you wanted to play the game.
Within Hustle. The lines.
Yes.
Right?
Charlie Hustle.
Yeah.
And we have a joke at my house. Many of my children played baseball and softball. And when somebody hoofs out an infield single or makes it on an error because they ran, we say TWYH, which means that's why you hustle. And so they'll like me talking about that. But, Pete Rose epitomized hustle and the Big Red Machine. I was an Orioles fan growing up because there wasn't a Nationals team or the Senators. Eddie Murray was mm-hmm. consummate professional. Of course, Cal Ripken and that whole 70s and 80s with Earl Weaver. So those are the players that
animal. I'm too young to remember him, but I've heard the tales of Earl Weaver. He had a mouth like a sailor.
Yeah, he did. And yet he ended up in the broadcast booth, I know, for some postseason games, and you would think he was a choir boy when he talked. But it was a fun era, and I think it's a fun era right now. I think it's pretty exciting what we're seeing right now in baseball.
Conference report vote on Pete Rose in Cooperstown, yes or no?
I'd have to say no, because I'm still of the opinion that you can't be betting on your own teams.
Sure.
And that's just, that's why Joe Jackson is not in the Hall of Fame.
Cardinal rule, cardinal sin. You completed a 10K last weekend.
Yes, my daughter and I did. I'd never done that before. You know, I'm not a great runner, but it's a good way to get some energy out, and it's free because you can just run in the neighborhood after work or before work, which is rare. But she said, come on, Dad, we're going to do a 10K this summer when she got back from college. And so we did it last Sunday, and it was a question of survival for me, but I did it. But it was exciting, and of course I got a t-shirt out of it. So I'd like, you know, I think I would like one day to potentially, you know, if things work out, I'd like to somehow do a half marathon or something. That would be a real achievement for me, who was not a very fast person as a child. But again, it makes you, you know, the adrenaline,
sure,
and all the things you hear about, raises your...
Those endorphins get
fired. Yes,
firing.
Exactly. I like that. That's a pretty good feeling.
So I'll say, hopefully this isn't too odd of a comment, I will sometimes write when I run. My brain starts firing away, and I'll start to, just lay things out in my head as I want to put them on paper or on a Word doc for radio. For me, sometimes it just helps me think. How did you celebrate, if you celebrated after the 10K? Was it with like ice on both knees or
no,
a cold
I think we
beer?
Just went to, I think we just went to Star. It was Sunday morning, so I think we went to Starbucks and got coffee. And I do. I listen to podcasts while I run. I'm not listening to Stadium Rock and Roll, you know, to get my or Rocky usually.
Right. The adrenaline up.
I often listen to history podcasts, some current events, but I try to stay away from contemporary politics.
Sure.
But it's just something to keep my mind on that as opposed to my physical condition.
This was one of your three children. I am a new dad. My son is 6 weeks old today.
All right. Way to go, man.
5 pounds up to 8 pounds. What do you wish you had known as a first-time father, if you can hearken back to that long ago? What's something you didn't know you wish you had known that you're comfortable sharing?
Well, just in the incredible joy that being a father brings was something I was unexpected. And I think I told you this before your son was born, just that it changed, you know, that it really does change everything.
Mm-hmm.
And your life is, it's not about as much about what you want to do. It's about, you know, protecting that child and making sure that everything is right for them. I'm sure that if I thought about it some more, I'm sure there's some things I wish I'd done more of, probably. I think I've learned as I've gotten older that this job is important, and I'm so indebted to the AP and certainly want to do all I can at my job. But sometimes, you know, just setting work aside and not, you know, having, you know, always concerned about, you know, spending more time at home and things like that. And it's been nice, though, as they are all, you know, in their late teens and now one of them almost 21, just to have time with them now. And I feel like in some ways that's kind of hopefully made up for some of the long nights I spent here in this dungeon. So, the legislative building.
Yeah, the legislative building. Last one. This is a really random one if people are still tuned in at this point. But I am left-handed. You are left-handed.
Yes.
One of a family friend who's a doctor took one look at my son's hair, the way his hair was like circled in the back. And for those people who don't know me, I don't have any hair. So I'm already jealous of my son on this front. But this doctor looked at it and said, he's going to be a lefty. And he didn't know I was left-handed. And I said, what? He said, he's going to be left-handed because of the way his hair was.
This was a doctor?
This was a doctor.
Wow.
And I was like, are you trolling me? Like, are you having fun with me? And he was like, no, why? And I was like, I'm left-handed. And he just noticed the hair. Anyway, this is a very random interlude, but I'm wondering, because I think it would be neat. I like lefties. I'm a lefty. Are any of your kids lefties?
No.
Okay.
One of them does. One of them I was trying to make one of them a switch hitter for baseball,
okay,
and I think he could have done it. He ended up actually batting left-handed, but he throws with his right hand. So was strange.
Yeah.
I think he could have been a left-hander, but, you know, it's one of those things. There's one thing I wish I would have possibly done. Make him really make force him to be a switch hitter. You know, how many of those do you have?
Not enough. Or on the Nationals or the Red Sox, not enough switch hitters these days. All right, we will end the discussion there for now. Much more to come in the days and weeks to come on the North Carolina budget. You can find out more about what is happening in North Carolina political news at our website, WUNC.org. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you do not already, you can download it as well at iTunes, Google Play, wherever it is that you get your on-demand listening. For Gary Robertson, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll leave you with a tune in honor of Representative Jimmy Dixon's watermelon-esque suit earlier this week. Here's a little bit from a 1962 Herbie Hancock classic. Thanks, as always, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.